So now I ask the question, Rabbi Akiva Lekula, right, the Korach Rabbi Akiva Lekula, did he really make a decision, you know, that is a Kula? Ditnan, we have another Mishnah which says, Heshiv Rabbi Akiva, O Chilov. On the contrary, in an argument that he had, he says, no, maybe it's the opposite. Take a look at Hazor. In other words, the sprinkling of the ashes, right? Shehi Mishum Shavuos. Now, this is prohibited not because it's a real violation of Shabbos, but it's what we call a secondary violation. You have to understand what Shavuos is. Okay. We have different categories of what is considered a violation of Shabbos. Okay? One violation, we say, is midoraisa. What is midoraisa? Midoraisa means that the Torah itself specifically prohibits this action. Okay? But then, we have other prohibitions that the rabbis instituted. As the very first Mishnah, in Pirkei Avos, you may remember, that the Arishei Knesset HaGdolah, right? One of the things that they said is, to make a fence around the Torah. Okay, what does it mean to make a fence around the Torah? It means that, right, you have to make enactments to make sure that the very heart of the Torah commandments are not violated. So that is what we call Shavuos. Now, in the Beis HaMikdash, certain things were considered Shavuos and they were permitted as an exception, okay, because it was necessary for the service of the Beis HaMikdash. But the actual violation of Shabbos, that already, that's a more serious thing, but certain things had to be performed anyway in the Beis HaMikdash. Because a sacrifice had to be always the Moado, in other words, in its appointed season, so that therefore these things had to take place at this time, because the Torah commanded that it be taken place at that time, and that's why they permitted a sacrificial system in the Beis HaMikdash, where not only was an animal slaughtered, but also at least part of the blood was sprinkled, and then certain parts were burnt on the altar. Or if it was an ola, a complete burnt offering, then the entire thing was burnt, which meant that the Kohen, even on Shabbos, what did he have to do? He had to supply firewood, the menorah had to be lit, and so on. You see, so that these things were permitted because the Beis HaMikdash was its own self-governing body in that respect, okay? But how about outside? So outside, we are not permitted to do certain things, even Mishum Shavuos, okay? Even though it's a secondary prohibition and not actually a Torah violation. In the Beis HaMikdash, certain things were permitted, certain things were not Mishum Shavuos. So what Akiva is arguing over here is, what is actually the prohibition of being sprinkled with the ashes of the Parah Adumah? Is it a Torah commandment not to sprinkle? The answer is no. It's prohibited only by Shavuos. And nevertheless, Shavuos means a secondary or a rabbinic enactment, okay? Rabbinic enactment that says you're not allowed to do this or that, because we're afraid that if you do this, then you go to a step further and actually, perform a violation of the Torah that the Torah itself, says not to. Okay? And nevertheless, what did he say? It is only Shavuos, and yet, Eino Doicha HaShabbos, it does not put aside Shabbos. In other words, Shabbos, it cannot be done on Shabbos, even though it is in the Beis HaMikdash. If it cannot be done on Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash, then what? Then is the person Tomei or not Tomei? You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah. he still remains tamei. So in this case, then we say that actually this is not lekula, but it's lechumra. So it's contradictory to what we said a couple of lines before. That's why I say it's not easy to follow the thread over here. But this is what we're saying at this point. So shechita, shehida raisa, lekol shekein. Shechita, which is normally prohibited by the law of the Torah, not allowed to shecht on Shabbos, right? So all the more reason that it should not be permitted. And yet what? Is it permitted in the Beis HaMikdash? Yes. Outside of the Beis HaMikdash? No. Okay. So, they
I don't understand.
I said, shechita in the Beis HaMikdash itself, that is to slaughter the animal, is permitted on Shabbos, right? Because that's part of the Torah service. The Torah mandated that the service be performed. You understand? And it's not just what we would call korbanos tzibor. You know, the sacrifices that are brought on behalf of the entire congregation of Israel. That there's no question. As I said, that was performed. But even in here, we have a case where it's individuals are slaughtering Erev Pesach, right, in order to prepare the Korban Pesach. How could they dare permit something like this in the Beis HaMikdash when it's a violation of Shabbos?
Right. Right.
You understand? This is the problem, right? But nevertheless, because the Korban Pesach has to be slaughtered b'moado in its proper season, so that therefore in this particular case that overrides the prohibition.
Where are they doing the shechting?
In the Beis HaMikdash itself. Not outside, but in the Beis HaMikdash.
Go ahead.
No, I see. I was always under the impression, so obviously it's a mistaken impression from the the shechita was actually done by each family outside the Beit HaMikdash, because there must have been hundreds of thousands of
That's exactly my question, David.
Essentially, it still had to be done. I can't vouch at this particular moment the exact place where it was done. But generally speaking, the shechting took place in the Azor itself. In other words, the great courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash.
So everybody would have to bring their...
As far as the Korban Pesach is concerned. All right. Remember, it's not every family. You can have several families join in one Korban Pesach. Each one has a little, you know, as long as he eats a shtickle of it, so he's fulfilled it, right? Because they had other parts of the meal, too, that they had to eat. They had also the shlavim, you know, the zvochim, the peace offerings, you know, that they had. The chagigah, as we would call it. It's a technical term, okay? So that, too, had to be eaten in addition. But the Korban Pesach, you had to eat at least a kezias, whatever the kezias means. Okay? Yeah, it's a small piece, right? Right. Technically, it's the size of an olive, but they must have had giant olives in those days. Right, right. I mean, when you tell me that a kezias matzah is about the size of here or something like that, you know, it's a little hard to imagine that. Okay. You know what? I'm a little bit tired tonight, so we'll continue from this point. Okay. Right. Tonight is the 28th of June in the year 2006. We are continuing now in the middle of Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis 46b of Maseches Avodah Zarah. Basic problem that they're trying to resolve in the last discussion that we had was about the difference kula and chumra. Kula, remember, means that you interpret it liberally, right? And chumen means that you do it severely. In other words, the kula says, okay, and the chumer says, nothing doing, okay? And they wanted to know, is it true that every time that you don't know whether an opinion is for lekula or lechumra, which way should we decide? So the first impression was that we should decide lechumra. Take always the stricter point of view. Okay? So now they brought in this business about the question about the person who was Tomei and the time of his becoming free from Tumah would be on Erev Pesach, but it's Shabbos. And he's in the question is, can he be permitted to observe, I mean, the Shechting and the Korban Pesach if he is sprinkled with the ashes of the Pora Aduma? Remember, that's part of the purification if you have contact with a dead person, okay? Or do we say that because it's Shabbos, it is prohibited? So, remember that?
Yeah. But frankly, why is couldn't the man who has to be get sprinkled with the ashes, couldn't he wait till after Shabbos?
But then he wouldn't be able to bring the Korban Pesach in its time. Of course, the Shechita has to take place.
He has to bring the Korban Pesach.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Shechita, the Korban Pesach, has to be in the afternoon of Erev Pesach. Okay? So that, for example, let's say if Pesach begins Wednesday night, so Wednesday afternoon is when Shechita takes place. Right. But what about those occasions where it happens to occur Saturday night? You understand?
The first Saturday.
Huh?
The first Saturday.
Yeah. The beginning of Pesach, which is when we have to eat the Korban Pesach.
Right.
Okay? So in that particular case, can he be sprinkled or not? We say that the sprinkling itself is shavuos. In other words, it's not prohibited by what? By the Torah.
Right.
But the rabbis put a prohibition on it because it was afraid it might lead to other violations of Shabbos. Right.
Now,
the rabbis decided that he could not be sprinkled. Okay, smach leikus. But the general decision is he may not be sprinkled. If he can't be sprinkled, then it means that he is tomei. If he is tomei erev Pesach, is he allowed to shech the korban Pesach? The answer is no. So that is being tough on him. Okay, that's luchumra. And of course, as we said, in that particular case, he has to have that makeup that we have on Pesach Sheni a month later, you know, on the 14th of Iyar, and to bring the Korban Pesach that night instead, okay? So, this is the way the argument seems to tend, right. As I said, I mean, there's a difference of opinion. As we said, again, we'll start again with, right.
So it has to do with the fact that they would do shechting on Shabbos, that they allowed.
That was permitted, that's correct. Because as I said, normally you're not allowed to shecht on Shabbos.
Right.
But in the Beis HaMikdash, for the sake of the Korban Pesach, it was permitted. It was, why was it overridden? Because the Korban Pesach, there's only one proper time in order to shecht it, and then subsequently to eat it. It has to be Mo'ado in its own proper season. You cannot postpone it. I mean, we have a second day yotah, but that has nothing to do with the situation. You understand?
So in this case, the whole congregation would be first seder for everybody. They would be
correct.
They would be shechting in the
Beis HaMikdash itself. Right.
No.
What? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That question was raised by, if you remember, by Hirschhorn. Right.
But this particular man can't do it.
He cannot do it,
Because he can't be sprinkled.
No, that's correct.
The sprinkling they
could right.
The shechting they were allowing for the normal.
Right, exactly.
But the sprinkling they decided against.
Don't they normally shech on Shabbos?
normally you're not allowed to shecht on Shabbos.
Don't they for mincha and so forth on Shabbos?
Okay, hold it.
And they have other korbanos on Shabbos?
We are talking right now. The service in the Beis HaMikdash itself, okay?
Yeah.
In other words, I have the korban tamid, you know, every day there was... in the morning and in the evening, they had a burnt offering, okay?
Shabbos, yeah.
Okay, that's correct, because that's also b'mardo.
Yeah,
l'hakriv li b'mardo, that's what we say when we read Tzavos b'nei Yisrael, okay? And there's the law,
okay?
So, that being the case,
that's
only for korbanos tzibur.
Sure.
In other words, for sacrifices that represent the entire community of the people of Israel. So there it is permitted to do the various malachas that are necessary, as for example, to put logs on the fire in order to, you know, so that it can burn the offering or something like that, to burn the ketores, you know, the incense and so on. I mean, this is permitted. Certain things that can be prepared before Shabbos were prepared before Shabbos. For example, on Shabbos, every Shabbos, they changed the loaves. They had 12 loaves of bread,
right,
if you remember, right?
11
and
bread.
Right. Now, 11 bread is in connection with the... you know, with the mincha. The kol mincha had to be 11, okay. But this, I'm not talking about the Kol Mincha right now, although we'll come to that too in a moment, okay? But I'm talking instead about the 12, what they call the showbread, okay? That, you know, had a special table with a special kind of a holder, receptacle, in order to hold the 12 loaves, okay? And they were changed every Shabbos, okay? So, No, they were changed on Shabbos itself, but when could they be baked? You're not allowed to bake them on Shabbos. They had to be baked before Shabbos. So in other words, certain things that could be done before Shabbos had to be done before Shabbos. But certain things that could not be done until that very day, so in the Beis HaMikdash and over. But what is the Korban Pesach? Is it a Korban Tzibur or is it a Korban Yochid? Just for the individual. The answer is a Korban Yochid. So a Korban Yochid is not allowed to shecht on Shabbos. You understand? That you can't do.
Except for Korban Pesach.
Except for the Korban Pesach. That's the one exception. That's correct. Okay. Got it. We got it.
Right, Joe.
Right.
Right, Joe.
Okay. So this is what we're saying. Amal our Papa the Rabbi says, "Cholheicha deyikar kula v'chuba lekulei pakin." He says, whenever it's a question between kula and chuba, right? So you mean to tell me you can't sometimes at least, you know, choose the easier interpretation, you know? The Hazor, the Pesach, the Pliga Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva, right? We had this machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in that the Rabbi Eliezer Sovar Luchumo, he says that you have to be strict. Now, if you're strict, then what? Believe it or not, it's just the opposite in this case of what I said a moment ago. Don't ask me why, because it seems...
Why?
Strict, what is
this? By strict, he means
that
you do sprinkle him. Because he has to bring the Korban Pesach on that time. Okay. Right?
Okay. I got it.
Right. The Korban Chayev Le'Legava, right? And he compels him, you know, in order to... The Rabbi Akiva Le'Kula. Rabbi Akiva takes the easier way to say what? Upotar means that he frees him from doing what? He frees him from the Hazor. But obviously, he's going to have the makeup Korban Pesach later on. So that's why I'm Pesach Sheni, right?
Why is that
for me? That's a good question. That's why I say it seems to be just the opposite of the way I would have interpreted it.
I think
that's
a more practical way.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't, more practical. Good. You don't desecrate the Shabbos by accepting on Shabbos.
Right.
And he eventually gets to
Yeah, eventually he'll do it. I mean, he'll bring the Korban Pesach, but he can't bring it at the same time that most of the community of Israel is bringing the Korban Pesach. Okay. All right, if there was other distance from the Beis HaMikdash, also then for them too is the makeup time. I mean, this is what the Torah says. You know, we're reading, we read it, right? In Pasha Bahaloscha, right?
A lot of other circumstances,
right?
Like,
Well, those two are mentioned specifically in the Torah. Either it was Tomei Ladefesh or Bederek Rechoka. In other words, either they were unclean in their spirit, in other words, because of contact with the dead, as I said,
right.
Or they were on a journey, they were away from the Beis HaMikdash, they couldn't get there on time. Okay? So with them, it was Pesach Shemini was created. Okay?
The word kotzer that I'm looking at there is that Yiddish word. To be rid of.
Yeah, it's the same idea.
Right.
Of course. Yiddish incorporates loads of Yiddish words.
Why don't they bring in the Kal Vachomer?
Huh?
What's the Kal Vachomer?
The Kal Vachomer would have been, you know, that in as much as permitted to do this, let's say in the Beis HaMikdash permitted to share, and it's only so it should be permitted. But as we say,
that
doesn't work.
Rabbi Akiva's argument then?
Rabbi Akiva doesn't accept it, that's all.
He did accept it.
No, he didn't accept it. He didn't accept it. Okay, as I said, no. Right. Correct. He said not to sprinkle. Right, right. That's why I say it seems funny because it's punkt verkehrt, you know.
Right. Okay.
So, all right, they say now because Parach Rabbi Akiva Lekula. So tell me, is Rabbi Akiva really, is he giving an easier opinion, more liberal opinion? Ditznan. We have a passage in Sochim which says that the Heish of Rabbi Akiva, Oichilov, Rabbi Akiva says, no, maybe it should be just punkt the opposite. In other words, that, you know, it should be Lakumra and not permitted, right?
Yeah.
And push him off, and then Rabbi Eliezer would say yes. And he bases on the following argument, okay? He says, inasmuch as the sprinkling, which is Shavuos, remember I said Shavuos means that it's a prohibition by the rabbis rather than a prohibition in the Torah. Okay?
Is that a Hebrew word or an Aramaic?
What, Shavuos? Oh, it's Hebrew to begin with. It's related to the word Shabbos.
Oh, okay. I see it.
Yeah. But, I mean, the meaning is, you know, that don't do it, Shavuos. Let it rest, literally. Let it rest.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, right.
Interesting word.
Yeah. But as I said, I mean, you have to know, I mean, that it's used in a technical sense. Namely, it's not midoraisa, which means from the Torah itself. Okay? So he says, in the day of Shabbos, it does not override Shabbos. So Shechita, Shehida Raisa LeKol Shekein, right? So Shechita, which is prohibited by the Torah as a normal rule, all the more reason that you should not be permitted to Shecht Erev Shabbos, if it's on Shabbos, okay? This is what he's saying. But obviously, this is not the accepted halacha. The accepted halacha is that even if it's Erev Shabbos, you know, Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, so you still have to shecht it in the afternoon, Bein Harbayim, as it says, right? So he says, Chosam Rabbi Eliezer Gomre, so he says, there, Rabbi Eliezer actually is the one who taught what? He really was the one who taught that you should go ahead with it, right? He yakalei Talmud, and then he forgot what his teaching was. Why did he forget? Yakal means it was difficult for him. He had so many things in his mind that he forgot what he had said. Okay? The also Rabbi Akiva Latchurei, and Rabbi Akiva was a disciple of Rabbi Yezer, came along in order to remind him what he had said. Right. And this is the meaning then of the quotation that we have over there in Gemara Pesachim, where it says, Rabbi says, don't cause me to deny what I heard from you at the time of the judgment, because kach mekubal ani mimecho, I learned this from you itself, right, from you yourself, that hazor shavuos, that, right, hazor, in other words, the sprinkling is shavuos, ve'eino doiches haShabbos, and it does not override Shabbos. So, in other words, this was the opinion originally to begin with, and Rabbi Akiva simply reminded him that this was it. Okay. All right, so now we come back again to some of this business where you make things Avodah Zarah, right? And can you get any hanor from them? As, for example, mountains, streams, remember? All right, so now we're coming back again to that type of an argument. Are you allowed to have any hanor if a person takes an object and he makes it into an Avodah Zarah? And obviously we're going to have a pro and a con, and under what circumstances, right? All right, so the first one, boy, Rami Bar Choma asked the following question. He says, Hamishtach Havev, somebody bows down, you know, like Natakur Mishtachvim, you know, right? So he bows down the Komas Chitim to a stack of wheat. Okay, picture. Sees he has wheat stacked up and he bows down to it. This is a deity to him. Okay. Remember we said, I mean, when we study mythology, you know, we think more or less in terms of the most familiar characters that we studied way, way back. In other words, Ichveus, Jupiter, Zeus, Hera, what, Aphrodite, whatever it may be, and so on and so forth. But the truth of the matter is that the idolaters bow down to anything. Trees we already had, right? Remember? Right, okay. So, that being the case, so the question is, here is wheat stacked up, Komas Chitim, right? So Marna Menoches. So now the question that is raised is, could you use this wheat in order to make the Korban Mincha? All right, remember, what was the Korban Mincha? Korban Mincha was a meal offering. In other words, you take grain, grind it into meal. Of course, it has to be sifted so that it's the finest flour. This is what we mean by the word solus, that we read, you know, right? Solus, mincha, belula, bashemen, etc. It has to be mixed with olive oil, right? And this was the korban mincha, okay? Okay. And at other times, it had to be baked in certain forms. In Vayikra, there are four different ways of baking, cooking, frying, and so on and so forth, right? These things, so that when you give a korban todah, you have to bring from each type of grain offering, okay? But the regular one was, as I said, it was a mixture of finely sifted flour with oil that was mixed together, okay? And this, of course, part of it, the Kohen had to take out, as we call the askora. In other words, he had to take he had to take what they call the komets, like a fistful, so to speak, okay, of the flour, and that is burned on the altar, and then the rest of it can be used by the Kohanim to eat. That was a meal reserved to the Kohanim, okay? So, again, coming back to this, so can wheat, which was bowed down to, then be ground up and used to bring a korban mincha? All right, implication over here, two implications. Implication number one is, if you're permitted to do it, right, then you can get Hanoah from it. Okay, remember, this is always a problem with Aveda Zorah. Something worships Aveda Zorah. Can you have Hanoah from it, or you can't have Hanoah from it? That's question number one. Okay? And question number two, and even if you can have Hanoah, is it proper to bring it where? To the Beis HaMikdash, you see. This is the problem. Okay? So,
these are individual, let's say the farmers.
Yeah.
The farmers, are they the ones who would take the wheat and grind it up and bring it to the, would they do the grinding and all?
They could. The question is, at a certain point, the Kohen himself has to prepare it. But it is possible to bring, or simply to bring wheat and give us a donation, you know, in order to bring Kohen. Yeah. If you're bringing an animal, it's a korban. You can bring wheat in order to present that, right? Or you could make a gift of wine. The wine is going to be used as what? It's a libation.
Yeah.
Because at the same time that they had a korban mincha in the Beis HaMikdash in the morning and in the afternoon, so at the same time, but it's also wine that was poured on the Mizbeach as well. It's the wine libation, right? V'yoyim ha'shavos, right? Shnei chvosim v'neishono temimim, right? First of all, it has to be two lambs, right? That are perfect, in other words, no blemish, whatever, right? Shnei esronim solis, and then two esronim of fine flour, belulav ha'shemen, mixed in with oil, right? The nisko, and the nisko, the nesach, that's the wine libation, right? So, this is, I mean, when we say it in the musaf, you know, we sing it, we say it, whatever we do. But, just before Yismacho, right? But sometimes we don't know what the literal meaning of this is, right? But, you know, the musaf service is supposed to recreate the special additional offerings that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash on the Shabbos, on Rosh Chodesh, and then the major festival days. Those are the days in which they have a korban musaf, okay? And this is why we recite a musaf service, to recreate that particular service, okay? Okay. So, and now this leads to the following question. Good evening, Beverly. Question is, yesh shinui b'nevad or ein shinui b'nevad? The question is, when something undergoes a change in its nature, does that remove from it the stigma of having been worshipped as Avodah Zarah or not? Right. Can you use it in other words? Okay. So, in that particular case, I mean, obviously, the question in reference to the wheat is, here the wheat is taken, it's ground up, becomes flour, and flour doesn't look like wheat growing in the field. So, would it therefore make it permissible to bring into the Beis HaMikdash and use it for a korban mincha? That's the question.
Yeah,
right.
Right. On a little, slightly different case, didn't we also study about, they found a piece of an idol.
Yeah.
You know, could they use it or not use it?
Yeah, it depends. Right, if it was chipped away or something like
that.
Right. As long as the Jew didn't do it himself. Either the force of nature did it,
whatever.
Or the Goy himself, actually, he as we said, he was mevatel, right.
Was that permitted at the time? I can't remember.
Yes.
They could get
it. Yeah. But only if it's small. Not from the idol itself, but, you know, the chip parts, right, that could be used.
We also
right.
sort of studied that when we studied about the wine and the different kinds of foods that were permissible and not permissible. We also had the concept that if it changed character,
right, like the herring, the fish who was chopped herring, and
was
okay.
The Boreas.
Yeah.
Boreas, right.
Yeah.
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 Okay. All right. Thank God, thank God. Whatever we learned has not been totally lost.
No,
it's constant.
Right. So this is the question. Yesh shinui b'nevad or ein shinui b'nevad, right? So mazutro b'reid Rav Nachman. So the question was asked, so he wants to come and try an answer for it, okay? So mazutro, the son of Rav Nachman, said, Toshma, he says, listen, he says, Kol ha'asurin legabe mizbeyach, we have a teaching in Tabura, where it says that everything which is prohibited to be brought on the altar, valdarsehem mutarim, their offspring is permitted. Now, obviously, what is he talking about? He's talking originally about what? Talking about animals. Okay? Okay. We haven't even finished with the animal yet. Okay. But if the animal itself, let's say, was worshipped as an idol, or God forbid if somebody practiced sodomy with the animal, or whatever the technical term is again. Okay, so in that particular case, the question is, and if the animal had an offspring, would the offspring also be prohibited, just as the mother animal itself is? You understand? This is the question. So we have this statement that says that the offspring would be permitted, but as we'll see, there are conditions attached to it. It's not that clear yet. B'tani Allah, and in connection with that, Rabbi Eliezer also, Rabbi Eliezer says, nothing doing. He prohibits it. Okay. V'lavit bo Allah, but didn't we learn in that connection? Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav bar Abuha. As Rav Nachman said, in the name of Rabbi the son of Abuha, Machlokes, he says, he says the machlokes with an animal occurs when the animal was subject, you know, to what is the technical term? Bestiality, right? Yeah, bestiality. Right. And subsequently, the animal became pregnant. I don't mean as a result of bestiality, but the event occurred. And then, subsequently, the animal became pregnant. Okay, so now we continue on Mem Zayin Omid Aleph. Okay. Avo Ibro, the Lefsof Nirbi'u, Divriyakol Asurin. In other words, what Rab Nachman Barabo is trying to say that there is a difference of opinion. But one opinion holds that if the animal was subject to bestiality and subsequently gave birth, right, then what? Then the aldersehen mutarim, as we said a couple of lines up above, in other words, the offspring would not be subject to this law that we had. Okay? So far, bear it in mind.
The offspring
would be permitted to be bought as an offering. Right,
but what does sodomy got to do with all this? I don't understand that.
It's already made the animal into tummy. It's just as bad, in other words, as if it had been worshipped as an idol. That's the
point.
That
was the idea.
Right, right. Okay. Just as bad. Abel Ibro, fill himself near me, you know, the top of the next page. But if the animal were pregnant, and at the time that it was pregnant, it then was subject to bestiality, then in that particular case, it says, Divrei Hakol, that's what that Dalet Hay means, and everybody's opinion, Asurin. Both the animal and also the embryo that it had within it are also prohibited because.
Yeah, right.
Because obviously the person who did it, he defiled already the animal that was carrying itself. The Hochiname, right? He says, likewise, he says, in the case of what? The wheat and the flour. Ke'ibru, with himself near Beutami. It's as if, first of all, the wheat was worshipped and it's as if it were the pregnant, right? And then afterwards, the soap, afterwards, you know, then it was Nirbo, okay, dummy, similar, okay. It's a little hard to say, but obviously what he's trying to say is that once the wheat was worshipped as Avodah Zorah, right, and at the time it was doing, and even though afterwards it's going to be what? It's going to be made into flour, but it's as if the flour that subsequently would be made is still part of the original wheat, and therefore it's also okay. This is what he's trying to say. No, I didn't say everybody agrees with it.
You know, it sounds logical to me.
Because it started it right.
Exactly.
Right. Correct.
Right.
So okay. So this is his opinion. Okay. This is his opinion.
Yeah.
Right. Ikar de Amre, others read the tradition as follows. It says, Mach loikas, you know, there was a difference of opinion, Kshen Yerbiyu, the self Hebrew, right? That first the violation of the animal took place, and afterwards the animal subsequently became pregnant, right? In other words, some say, once the animal has been violated, then even though it became pregnant afterwards, the offspring is prohibited. And the other one would say, what? Yeah. Even though the animal was violated, but the offspring that came afterwards was, you know, it was different, so to speak, and therefore was not subject to it. I mean, this would be like, where it said on the previous side over there, Valtek said Mutorum, right, that the lud, in other words, the offspring is permitted. So,
you know
yes.
What bothers me about this?
Yes.
How? I know this is these are not real cases. These are like Beispiels, right?
In many cases, you're right. I mean, they are really they're arguing points, right? Right, right.
Because how would anybody really know? If an animal had suffered bestiality, it wasn't done in public.
Well, it wasn't done in public, but
how would anybody really know?
Maybe somebody observed it happening. I don't know.
Maybe they were injured to the animal.
Yeah, possibly.
That kind of behavior might have been normative. Probably.
Unfortunately, I understand, even today, you can find people doing that. That's what they say. I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't enter our minds to do anything like that, but you have all kinds of Ishagayim in the world, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe in that culture that they lived in,
right. I mean, they used to say that sheep herders living out, you know, where they're away from companionship or something like that, so this is what they use in order to have a sexual release or something like that. So, they say all kinds of things. Obviously, they must have observed something. Sometimes an argument in the Gemara is simply in order to sharpen your mind.
Yeah.
But at other times, there could be a basis for it, you know. Right.
Yeah.
Even though it's strange to us. Right.
Yeah, you shall not lie down.
Right. Right. Okay. Ibru, right? So it's near Biyu, right? But if, if the animal was pregnant and then, you know, it was violated, so do we call everybody's in agreement that it's also, that it's prohibited. This is what we said before. The Hane Name Ki Ibru, but if so, Nibu Dome. And so, therefore, we would say that in the case of the weak, the same principle should apply, right? So they say, Hohi Hashta. Hey, what kind of a comparison is this?
They went off the deep end.
Right.
But the Gemara rejects the argument anyway.
Awesome. Okay. In the case of the animal, what? Ne'ikora behemoth. V'hashta behemah. To begin with, they had a behemah, and we still have a behemah, right? Dashahu, the achizah ba'anva. And all that happened is that a door was closed literally in its face, or something like that. But hacha, in the case of the wheat, meyikorechite, to begin with, it was wheat. V'hashta kippah, but now it's flour. So that therefore what? So therefore it's mutar. That's the answer. Okay. Since the change that took place, right. So that goes back to the question of what they raised on the previous side of the page, right? On the preceding page. Right. Whether a change of character, you know, changes it so that you can apply a different ruling altogether to it. Okay. Right. So, in a similar vein, now that you bring in the case, why Reish Lakish? Reish Lakish asks the following question. He says, Amishtachave ledekol, the person bows down to a palm tree. Okay? Lulavo mahu. So, the question is, what about mahu, right? Yeah. So, what about taking a particular branch of this palm tree, right? And using it, what? The mitzvah. Okay? Using it for the mitzvah on Sukkos. Using this branch as part of, you know, the fourth species, right? So, again, here was the palm tree. It was worshipped, okay? So the question is, coming back again to something that we had similarly at one time, a couple of weeks ago, the Ilan Shedetor Mitzchilo Lechach Lotiboelach. In other words, if the tree were planted specifically to be Avodah Zarah, right, then don't even ask the question, Lotiboelach. You couldn't even use it for ordinary purposes, let alone for mitzvahs, right? But when do you raise this question? It says, "Be'ilon shenito," a tree that was planted as a regular tree, right? You had no ulterior motive in mind. But if so, and then some later period, somebody came and he bowed down to it as an idol, right? Vali, but the Rabbi Yosef by Yehuda, loti boy lecho. And according to Rabbi Yosef by Yehuda, don't even have a question that in that particular case, even for ordinary purposes, it's prohibited. He is a machmir in this particular case, right? He's very strict. But kitiboy lechor, when is the question appropriate? It's alibo de rabbanon. It's in connection with the opinion of the rabbis, the sages, right? Well, we had that question originally about a tree which was planted for ordinary purposes, and then afterwards it was worshipped. The rabbi said what?
Can't use it.
Huh? No, they said you could use it. You know, the branches fell down, or whatever, the leaves, I mean, they said it could be, because the original purpose was not it wasn't planted specifically to be the Avodah Zarah. Okay, that's the point. So, things that fell off, the tree itself, no. But what fell off, we said, could be used.
Well,
okay,
it fell off before the tree was worshipped.
Right.
Then it's okay.
There wouldn't be any question.
But if it fell off after the tree was worshipped, it can't be used.
Right.
After the tree was worshipped, you could not use what fell off?
It all depends, I mean, on the circumstances. But we had a similar question at that particular time, as between a tree that was planted for ordinary purposes as compared to a tree that was planted for Avodah Zarah specifically.
Yeah.
Right.
So this other tree that in ordinary circumstances wasn't? Would they consider sitting in the shade getting a noah from it?
Well, yeah, that would be hadoah. I mean, we would think, that you're not doing any mice or something like that, you know, just sitting or something like that. But even so, if you have pleasure in the fact that you're getting...
you're
right. You can feel nice and cool when it's hotter. as soon as they gather. That's how they are also. Right. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda says no. But how about the Rabbanan? So the question is, they were more lenient, but again the question is, Inyan Mitzvah, why? Right, this is the question. In other words, can this branch be used for the mitzvah of lulav? This is the question.
Not just getting benefits.
Right, not just getting benefits. Right, exactly.
Excuse me, I'm a little lost now.
Yeah.
Again, the same question revolves in my mind.
Yeah.
Are we now at the point where the tree that was planted for ordinary purposes has been worshipped and a branch falls off of it?
Yeah.
We decided now that that branch cannot be used for ordinary purposes, or it can be used for ordinary purposes.
According to the sages, it could be.
Even after the tree itself
was worshipped. Right. As long as the tree was not planted to begin with as an Aveda Zarah. Okay.
But now we're learning what it was not to be used for Aveda Zarah.
Right. This is a good question. Can it be used in order to fulfill the mitzvah of the lulav on the circus? That's the question. Right. Right. Mimoyis klapi gavoa. In other words, would the Rabbeinu Shalom find it mias? Okay. Would he find it mias? That's what mias, literally. Okay. All right. It's pastish for the Rabbeinu Shalom. Right. All ein dikui eitzel mitzvahs. Or we have to say, there is no postponement forever when it comes to mitzvahs. In other words, in the chuyas of mitzvahs would mean that there comes a time when it may be permitted, even for a mitzvah. Okay, comes a time when it may be permitted. In other words, it's not prohibited to eternity. That's what we're trying to say. Okay.
So is the rabbis saying this?
Yeah. Well, that's a machlokes, a question.
Yeah.
Is it or is it like that, right? We're talking about the use actually for lulav. For schach, we could probably be a little bit more lenient in that particular case than we would. Because for the schach, you don't make a special bracha, although you do make a bracha nation pasuka, you know. So in that sense, the schach is still a very important part, because what is the word sukkah itself? Sukkah means, you know, a hut, and that it is sukkah, it covers over you, you see. And that's what the schach means, it's a covering, okay? Right. But we could probably be a little bit more lenient, because the schach isn't just one piece, you understand? But there are many more pieces that you have to put in order to make the schach, you understand? Yeah, but lulav, you don't have 20 branches for the lulav, you can only have one branch. Yeah, well, that's already a different story. Yeah, not every palm tree qualifies, that's true. Okay. Okay, so, Kiyosu Rab Dimi, when Rab Dimi came from the Shivas in Eretz Israel, he came to Babylonia, right? So he reported as follows. He says, Omar. He says, the question is about an asherah. Remember we said asherah could be a tree or a grove of trees, right? But what is bitlo? Bitlo, we said, that means that a goy came, originally he had worshipped it, right? But then he decided, right, Scottish with Gornish, right? So he's Mavatl, he says it's not worth anything, and so on, okay?
Not worth anything.
Right, not worth anything. So the question is, Yesh dichui etzel mitzvah, so ein dichui etzel mitzvah. They want to know, is there postponement forever? In other words, you can never use it for a mitzvah, right? Or there is no such thing, you know, that it's prohibited to eternity when it comes to mitzvahs. So he says, Tifshutle, you can sort of figure it out, Midit Danan, from another Mishnah. This is a Mishnah which deals with the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam. Kisui Hadam means literally covering the blood. The law in the Torah is that if you shecht a fowl, or if you shecht a chaya, not a behema, but a chaya, what's the difference between a chaya and a behema?
I can tell you that. It wouldn't sound good.
It could be like an ayal.
Yes, correct.
What's an ayal?
Deer.
A deer, a gazelle, and so on. Right, that's correct. They are, right. The behema is a domesticated animal. Okay? Right. The chaya is a non-domesticated animal. Okay?
So you know what? Yeah. That's redundant. Because the chaya is a
chaya. Right.
They used to say,
well, the chaya. Yeah. I mean, right. It's so, redundant. It's true. Yeah. I mean, in other words, like the deer and the roebuck and so on and so forth. All right.
The seer and the roebuck.
The seer and the roebuck. The deer and the roebuck. The deer and the roebuck play, or maybe it's the deer and the antelope play, or something like that. But, I mean, if the animal itself, right, has split hooves, and it chews a cud, so even though it's a non-domesticated animal, it's still a kosher species. But when it comes to shechting, there's a different rule concerning the covering of the blood. With a behema, when it's shechted, you don't have to cover its blood on the ground. Okay? That doesn't have to be covered. Shecht a chicken or any other fowl, but, you know, we're familiar with chickens, turkeys, geese, and so on and so forth. When the shechet shechts it and the blood gushes forth, you have to cover it with earth. With earth, with ashes, but it has to be covered. And the same thing applies to a chaya as well. If you would shecht a deer or a buffalo or something like that, then in that particular case,
is that a law from the Torah?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, right. Right.
But you know, you don't know what the reason is for it.
You know, with certain mitzvahs of the Torah, we can't ask any questions. What's the logic over there?
Why is it okay for that?
Right. It's not a question of logic, but that's the law of the Torah, that's all. Right. Yeah. Excuse me. No, shlo kaporos, but then you have to shecht it. But then you still have to shecht it, you know. Because you can't simply wring its neck. that would make a trafe if you like it.
You would enjoy that.
Well, the domestic animal.
Okay. All right. So let's see how it applies over here. We'll do this over here. Okay. Yeah. So.
How does the fowl compare to the chaya?
They are both subject to the same law of Kisui Hadom. That's why I say, I mean, with certain things, I can't give you a logical reason. Okay?
Okay.
The Torah says it, That's all there is to it. Right? Yeah. So, all right. So, what is the quotation that they bring from the Gemara in the Chulin? It says, Kisohu in his gala, portum in lechazes. Okay. Case number one, he shechted it, he covered it with earth, whatever it was that he used, and then it became uncovered. Became uncovered for whatever reason it was, okay? So, the rule over here is potter milchaseis. He does not have to cover it over again. Okay? So far, so good, right? But now we have the next clause. Kisohu haruach, right?
Yeah.
If it was then covered by the wind blew and covered it again, or uncovered it again, excuse me, right? Then the chay of lechazes. Then in that particular case, he has to cover it. The Omar Rav Bachona, he says, Omar Rav, So Rabbi Chochanan said the name of Rabbi Yochanan, excuse me, Loi Shonu El Shachozav and Nizgala. We're talking about where it happened a second time and it was revealed that what? That we have to cover it over again. Avol Loi Chozav, if it did not again be revealed in Nizgala, then Potter Melachasis. Then, if it happened only the first time, then you don't have to cover it over again.
This is the wind blowing
right.
And
uncovering. Right, right, right. Okay?
Wait a minute. You don't have to cover it the first time.
The first time, you don't have to cover it if you've already fulfilled the mitzvah covering it, and
right.
Then for some reason or other became uncovered.
Yeah. Right.
So you don't have to cover it over again.
Right.
But if the wind, let's say, blew upon it again, and once more it uncovered it.
How could it be uncovered the
second
time?
I knew you were going to ask that. It's already uncovered.
Because it doesn't... No.
It's already uncovered.
Right, okay, good question. Good question,
good question.
But maybe it happened, the first time he personally did it, but the second time the wind came.
They have a right to ask that question.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to ask that question because it makes it very easy.
Okay.
If it's uncovered, it's uncovered.
Right.
Then how did it uncover it a second time?
But somebody might voluntarily.
But it says that the wind covered the blood. The wind came and covered the blood.
Well, the wind came and covered the blood.
Yes.
And then the wind came and uncovered it a second time.
Right.
Apparently, yeah.
Right.
So then, if it happened the second time, then you do have to.
Yes.
It.
Right. Okay.
That's the way it's
I know the question you're going to ask
right.
Next. It's going to come together. What do we do? Differ all day. All right. Okay.
Yom Rabba Malchonon. He says, Rabbi Yochanan, they showed him the Shechos of the scholar, right? That they came.
Yeah.
I'm repeating the same sentence.
Okay.
I will learn Shechos of the scholar, but if it is not revealed the second time, then in that case, portable chassis, so they has to, then it doesn't have to cover it. And so he asked a question about this. He says, "Ki chozav in his gala, my have," and if it became again uncovered, new is was, how will be itche? Since whatever happened, so you shouldn't have to do it over again, right? So therefore Rav Papa says, and so Seberus says, this shows that what? Ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs. That when it comes to mitzvahs, there is no such thing as, once it's done, that's it for all times.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's an interesting analogy.
There is no such thing as...
Right.
Like if you said beer cut must own today, that doesn't... You still have to do it tomorrow.
No, that's not exactly. It means because you can see that with a case of the wind, that there really is no permanent solution to anything, because no matter how many times you cover it, it could be uncovered.
Yeah.
This is the same thing here. They're saying that you can't say that once something is asur, it's asur forever, because there's no permanence to anything.
Right. That's what he's trying to prove.
Exactly. That way get a lead to
maybe
the conservative Judaism to have a historical progression of different traditions?
Well, look, it's obvious that in the Talmud itself, there are all kinds of traditions. It's obvious. But still, when it comes to halacha, we need something to know what is the definite ruling in this case.